Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us.
I'm curious about the rules of the game. How much of history has been overseen, overwritten, overrode, benignly intervened, put on a track and put back on the track? And who's running the rat race? Who's in charge? We seem to see an unseen hand behind controlling the Earth's resources, behind the manipulation of mass consciousness. Is the council monitoring all of this, or are there divisions within dimensions that feed back to the council? And what is the basic approach to getting 100 monkeys that realize that we're not alone on the Earth, that to get a critical mass of awareness? Is it to bring in more experienced souls? How many are being born in for that purpose, or is it just the evolutionary process ripening us on the tree of life and then dropping us off? That's a start there.
Yeah, that's a mouthful, Richard, and it covers a lot of different interactions because there are rules. Let me start with alien-to-alien rules, what they call the rules of engagement. Our alien visitors are divided into two groups, not surprisingly the good and evil groups, or what the Zetas have termed the service to other group for good, the empathetic and caring and working toward a common good, and the service to self group that are self-focused and operating more like a prison colony than any other type of social setting that we could relate to. Traditionally, only about 5% of emerging souls choose that prison colony path, and the 95% choose the path toward empathy and practicing the golden rule. Well, there are rules governing alien interactions with each other, as well as their interactions with humans. But I would like to explain first their rules of interacting with each other. And I quote from Zeta Talk, rules of engagement. Our rules in regards to behavior on Earth are determined by the Council of Worlds, which administer the goings-on of intelligent life of all kinds in this part of the universe. These rules govern the expected clash between service to self and service to other oriented groups. Why are these rules necessary? Humans find the self-centered in the same vicinity as the altruistic and empathetic. The rules of human society take this into account. Your laws on criminal behavior, for instance, are an example of rules assuming a mix of service to self and service to others. They spell out what criminal behavior is, when the line is crossed, and when one intrudes upon another. In the service to self-oriented groups, all are essentially criminals. They are ruthless and utterly without scruples. They would prey upon each other endlessly. The control over each other is not by criminal rules, but by the rule of the strong. The pecking order is ruthlessly established by whatever means necessary. Once established, this becomes the law. Essentially, the rule of law is the long list of rules from the lawgiver. Democracy has absolutely nothing to do with this process. It is a dictatorship. In the service to other oriented groups, none wishes to hurt the other. Concern for the group, the other, is expected and delivered. Rules are not used to control here either. Order is established by the group discussing what needs to be done and various members volunteering. Communication regarding difficulties, requests for assistance, and status on the ongoing concerns of the many are frequent. There are no secrets. There is no need to be defensive against each other, as all have common goals and none means to take advantage of the other. There are no locked doors. All turn their backs on each other without fear. goods are not hoarded, but shared. Service to other entities trust each other utterly, and this trust is not misplaced. Mix these two groups together, and what would happen? Well, the service to self would endlessly take advantage of the service to other. To some degree, this takes place on your world. The self-centered moan they're put upon, unfairly treated, are injured and need a lighter load, cut to the quick by some treatment of them, and all manner of ruses to take advantage of the good-hearted folk. In the world of service to others, where all have let down their guard to concentrate on mutual goals, assuming themselves surrounded by friends, this trust would prove disastrous. In short, the two groups cannot mix. You may choose to call this a type of quarantine of the service to self, or giving the service to self a prison colony environment, if you wish. So do the two groups ever encounter each other? Only when both agree, and under a strict set of rules. The type of engagement may be one of three types. Non-engagement. This will happen if there is a request for an engagement, but that request is refused. 2, a limited engagement, meaning that either the requester or the acceptor has placed limits on the engagements. Well, the limits can have all manner of characteristics. For only an hour, no touching, only in the dark, only numerics can be discussed, you know, whatever. 3, unlimited engagement, meaning without limitation, until the death of one entity or the other. Where one of the entities is an individual, this engagement runs until the incarnation ends, till the individual dies, physical death. Where one of the entities is a group, this engagement runs until the group disbands or is eliminated in some meaningful manner. What do you think, Richard? Did that answer any of your questions?
Well, I see on this world there's a lot of locked doors, and it doesn't seem like 5%. Is 5% running 95%?
Well, actually, the 5% are off with themselves. They only interact with each other, and only on rare occasions do they and the 95% interact. On our world, yeah, this happens on our world too, and it's where a lot of times the Zetas will say they can't comment on something, they can't answer somebody's question, because to do so would mean they would have to engage the service to self aliens. Like, they did that during the cattle mutilations. It was one instance where people said, well, who's doing this, right? And they said, in order to get into that at the present time, we would have to engage service to self aliens, and we don't have the resources, so we don't want to do that. Well, that's a clue right there that the service to self aliens are running the operation, cattle mutilations. But after the service to self aliens stop doing that, and it's kind of like a thing in the past, then they can comment on it. And they'll say, well, now we can comment on it, and they'll give us the straight poop. So it does come up in our world, and that kind of segues nicely into my next description of the rules, alien-human interaction rules. The Zeta Talk states that there are rules of the game more than man supposes going on our world between aliens and humans and the aliens that are visiting humans. It's kind of like the Star Trek talk about the prime directive, where there's a hands-off or a non-interference. It's called the rule of non-interference, which is the major rule controlling alien-human interaction. But Star Trek gives the impression that there's kind of like a free-for-all, where what we have here on Earth, where anybody can touch anybody can confront anybody, that prevails everywhere in the universe. And the Zetas have said that's not so. Only in the kindergartens. Our Earth is at what I call a kindergarten, first stage for young or emerging souls, where they're just sort of trying to sort it all out and decide which group they want to be in. You know, the decision to be good or evil is our very first lesson or decision. And after that, we move into other dimensions and get around the universe and we're quarantined. The 5% are quarantined from the 95%. But in the kindergartens, it's kind of like, I like to say, it's like drug dealers and counselors, you know, from the church are hanging around the fence, reaching their hands in and trying to talk to the kindergartners running around on the slides and the swings. You know, the drug dealers are saying, let me suggest you do this with your life. And the guys, you know, the priest is saying, let me suggest you do that. You know, like the little devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other. And that's more or less our situation and our interaction. So the devil and the angel on the shoulders, they have rules for interacting with each other. And they have rules for interacting with people. And because there is a police force, an administration in the universe, which the Zetas call the Council of Worlds. And I'll give you a quote to describe this from Zeta Talk, Council of Worlds. The members of the council, being primarily from the higher spiritual densities, are not, in the main, incarnated. This makes for a setting humans might find amusing when holding council with incarnated aliens. Those incarnated stand around gesturing and communicating with grunts or diagrams or telepathically or through translators if necessary. Now and then all fall silent and still while the council communicates to them soul to soul, and the incarnated souls then hastily update their physical minds through the mind-spirit connection. Then another round of discussion ensues. To an outsider, unaware of what was happening, the voice of authority would seem to be absent. And that's the end of the quote from Zeta Talk, Council of Worlds. Well, spiritual growth is self-taught in our kindergarten. It's not academic. It really translates into actions. The ultimate test of your decision to be empathetic and caring and practice the golden rule is, you know, something like what's going on in New Orleans currently, where there's tremendous chaos and people suffering, and how much do people want to reach out their hands and help another and putting themselves at risk, or how much do they just want to clutch their belongings and run for the hills and to heck with, you know, babies trapped in rising floodwater. And so therefore it's a self-taught schoolhouse, and it's kind of a hands-off environment because that's the fastest way for spiritual growth to happen. So in the playpen, basically, we can all bop each other over the head with our toys, and that's allowed. Thus we learn to cooperate or you know, care for each other or realize we can take advantage of each other and take that path, should that be. So the Zetas have described this hands-off policy as a council charter, and I quote from Zeta Talk, Council Charter. Their guiding principles appear to be gentle restraint, and their goals providing an unfettered environment for spiritual growth. In this, the council does not act as a teacher, but rather allows the children full access to their environment, a stimulating classroom. End of quote. Well, is there no restraint? Well, apparently not, for forming souls learn best what it means to be caring or totally self-focused, in that extremes are possible, and therefore decisions are forced. It's not like sitting around having tea. You know, we're in there, we're in the trenches, and it's a more rapid acceleration to spiritual growth. Desertion or heroism, sadism or empathy, hoarding or sharing. You know, there's choices to be made, and choices are made in this environment. Well, this chaos in the kindergarten doesn't last, as these spiritual babies sort out, and when a young soul is 95% are determined to be service to other and ready to graduate out of kindergarten when they really practice the golden rule and think of others as often as they think of themselves. This doesn't mean being a rugrat or a patsy. This means you care about yourself, you defend yourself, you have goals, you have ambitions, but you also think of others 50-50. Now, the 5% that go off to prison colonies sort out, it's not that they never have an empathetic thought. They never get a tear in their eye. 5% of the time, they fleetingly have a thought for others, but 95% of the time, they're self-focused, and that's a true hardened service to self. So how does the Council of World keep that 5%, which are so self-centered, like drug dealers? They don't care about anybody. They don't care about any laws. They have no morals. they do what they want to, what pleasures them, what gains them power. And I mean, on Earth, we know it's the police force and calling 911 and that type of thing, prisons. But how does that work with aliens? And I quote from Zeta Talk, keep in line. Humans think of physical restraint, or at most, perhaps drugging the recalcitrant subject, so they involuntarily abstain from criminal behavior. At the far reaches of human restraint, mechanisms are such tools as lobotomy for violent mental patients, or castration for rapists, or pedophiles, and of course, imprisonment or the death sentence. The Council of Worlds has recourse to methods beyond the physical, and these methods would amaze humans in their effectiveness. Essentially, this is a block that prevents any physical or mental action not authorized. End of the quote. Well, the rules are, essentially, hands off. And the visitors from other worlds, they can counsel us, as I said, around the fence, around the kindergarten, at our request. But this is not a physical interference. This is kind of like a psychological counseling. It's psychological. It's not physical. As portrayed in Star Trek, the prime directive is the rule of non-interference, and that's a physical restraint, and in that regard, it's probably pretty accurate. And I quote from Zeta Talk, free will. Humans, in general, do not understand how non-interference works. On Earth, this tends to be all or nothing. You tell your children that sex is non-existent and punish them for thinking about it. And then one day they're married and can have at it, all or nothing. In between, it's a swamp that everyone is distressed about. Non-interference can best be explained if you keep in mind that nothing can be done by an alien unless it is through a human. Nothing. In this, they must wait until a human signals an interest in having a conference. End of the quote. Well, in a self-teaching schoolhouse, then, are there no teachers to step in and rescue the kiddies, you know, when they get in a fix? Very little rescue is authorized by the council, a concept humans have difficulty with. They keep looking for the parental, hand of God to come down, the benign rescue of some sort. You know, why aren't the aliens stepping in? You know, if we're going to have a pole shift, why don't the aliens stop it, for instance? But this is a schoolhouse, and we are to learn by helping each other or turning our backs on each other. And the idea of having a pleasant, tea, everyone's beautiful, everyone's living the jet set lifestyle, pleasant days go by, the weather is, completely 70 degrees and never varies. There's no spiritual growth that happens. And likewise, if you're rescued all the time, you're not really learning to deal with the consequences of your decisions. And I quote from Zeta Talk, intervention. Humans so often look to others beyond themselves for salvation that they can scarcely imagine a situation where the Earth would not be rescued by what has been termed their benign space brothers if the chips were truly down. Perhaps man has been allowed to tinker with nuclear bombs and global warming only because the situation is not yet dire. Like children playing near the edge of a cliff, they have been issued warnings, but should they start to go over the edge, intervention would arrive. Such is often the case in human affairs and is routinely the rule. Young children should not be allowed to play in traffic, although on occasion this happens by accident or oversight and death or injury may occur. The rule, however, is that intervention should occur. Even adults anticipate rescue. Bank failures see the steadying hand of the Fed. Worthless stock, the oversight of the SEC. Reckless driving, the flashing lights of a patrol car. And a call to 911, the swift arrival of numerous and various rescue vehicles. Would not the Council of Worlds interfere if the Earth, the subject of such care and concern by so many alien groups, were to be on the edge of ruin and devastation? The short answer is no. End of the quote. So, if counseling is the only interference, outside interference allowed, just how does this work? Well, this is called The Call. It's a section of Zeta Talk that goes into some detail about how the call works. You know, the human desires, either by, mentally even prayer or meditation or curiosity, all these can be considered giving the call, because it's a desire to know more or to talk about an issue or to seek an answer. And I read and quote from Zeta Talk, The Call. The concept of the call is but an extension of concepts humans are familiar with. One goes to the porch to call the family to dinner. One picks up the phone to call another in order to converse. When giving the call to aliens, humans are issuing a request for contact without a voice, without words, but the meaning is sent and understood. Nonetheless, by telepathic and other such wordless and wireless means, the call is made, received, and understood, and a conference is subsequently arranged. There are times of loneliness, despair, wrenching concern for a loved one injured or in trouble, times the individual wants to offer themselves in the loved one's stead, times when the path to follow is not clear and there is indecision and hesitation at the gateway, times when another is viewed as a blockage to be removed by physical and potentially violent and harmful means. These sorts of times occur, not daily, but many times in a lifetime. These are times of the call. The individual is in control of alien interactions affecting him or herself. This is, in fact, intuitively understood by most humans, even those who are unaware of alien influences over their lives. The reason this is intuitively understood is because of interactions not consciously remembered. All humans give the call and do so frequently during any given lifetime. End of the quote. Well, this is not interference, it's counseling. And it's psychological counseling, not physical, I'm going to push you down this path. Hands off, but making suggestions. Since there are two camps interested in the babes here growing in our kindergarten world on Earth, they have naturally two different approaches. The 5% who have become criminals are, in essence, standing around the schoolyard fence, suggesting that the kids get into a life of drug and crimes. And I quote from Zeta Talk, service to self call. This is done not by telepathy, but by computer, which traces, surprisingly enough, a brainwave configuration generated when humans are dealing either with rage or intense defensive postures. This brainwave is generated almost continuously in those humans, strongly in the service to self, as they are constantly enraged that their surroundings aren't placating them. It's not the level of this brainwave that is monitored, it is the constancy. And when located, this individual is watched more closely. Their brainwave configuration has marked them as one in the service to self, in essence, giving the call continuously due to their frustration. Of a like mind, you might say. End of the quote. Well, which of us hasn't met somebody that we considered basically always thinking for themselves? They may be loudly demanding, shove other people around like a bully, or they may be very clever about it and have honey in their mouth all the time, but they're always kind of angry. There's always this kind of a vibe coming off of them because, they want things to go their way, and they resent that they're not, getting their way all the time. And I have. I know people who I would say consistently are trying to manipulate others to better themselves, and even though they may claim they're trying to help the other person, you know, it comes out that they're self-focused, and they give off that kind of a angry vibration all the time. But the 95% who are essentially practicing the Golden Rule are also available for conferences, but they give different advice, obviously. Who takes the call depends on the nature of the request. Yeah, for instance, if a human giving the call is concerned about others, then this is a call to caring and empathetic alien visitors who give advice along those lines. But if the human giving the call is self-focused and looking for revenge or ways to attain power over others, this is a call to the self-focused service to self aliens, the criminal element, who likewise give advice to their way of thinking. Well, you know, who knows what they might say, you know, like maybe they may not say go murder your neighbor so you can run off with his wife, but they may suggest how a seduction might take place, or that they can cut down and demean the neighbor, you know, to make him feel bad about himself and look bad in his wife's eyes, that kind of counsel. Prayer, curiosity, seances, all these are means by which human give a call, but the rule is the intent of the caller determines the type of response. It's either by one group or another. However, it is possible for a given human to be dithering, and he gets the angels on one shoulder, and a little later he gets the demons on another shoulder, and then back to the angels. You know, you can have both groups visiting this human back and forth as he tries to sort things out. And I quote from Zeta Talk, "Who takes the call? When the call is given in the service to self, unpleasant visitations can arise. This may confuse some people who feel that they are sincerely calling out of concern and love. In a prayer, for instance, prayer is often encapsulated in a request to be saved from distress. So it's easy to see how self-concern can creep into such a call, even though this call is structured in what some in human society would term a loving or religious way and not at all self-centered. Fear, in and of itself, is a mechanism that those in the service to self use to drive those leaning in that direction, those contemplating those thoughts further in that direction. Those who are fearful are very much looking out for themselves. Yell fire in a crowded theater and see how many people think of others. They think of themselves." End of the quote from Who Takes the Call. Most of this information that I've quoted from Zeta Talk, written in 1995. Well, Richard, that was a long-winded explanation about how aliens and humans interact and how these aliens interact with each other when they're interacting with humans. I don't know if that's clear at all. What do you think?
Well, where is the world now in terms of 95% and 5%? That doesn't seem to be exactly where we are. Is the 95 and 5%, does that represent the point of harvest? Is that, you know what I mean? We don't seem to be in a state where 95% of the people are leaving their doors open and following the golden rule, and only 5% are in the dark, you know?
Yeah, you're right.
So where are we?
Well, we're not actually... We're moving in out of the kindergarten stage, even though everybody's not ready to graduate. And the Zetas have said that this is because this big pole shift is supposed to be a very severe one coming at us, and 90% of our world's population will die. And it was administratively scheduled that we would have like a graduation out of kindergarten, and those that are not ready to graduate are going to be taken off to another kindergarten, a water world, you know, and to be reincarnated into kind of an octopi type of creature. They said at the current time maybe 30%, 25 to 30% are solidly service to other on our world. Probably around 5, maybe even 7% solidly service to self. That's a little higher percentage than the rest of the universe. Our world is a little more negative than the average kindergarten, but I'm sure we're not an exception in that regard. And the rest, what are we talking about here? Maybe 65% still in kindergarten, haven't made the decision yet, still giving a call to both different kinds of aliens, you know, that are visiting and still trying to sort it out. So you're right. Mostly it's undecided. It was kind of interesting that in responding, you know, to queries about like Whitley Strieber's books, Communion and the like, excellent books, which I thoroughly enjoyed reading, he describes kind of both interactions. He describes being terrified and mistreated, but at the same time, different, you know, a kind of caring, you know. Zetas have said that he actually gave the call probably out of fear, you know, to the service to self as well as service to other. Both groups visited him, and he finally kind of sorted it out, but at first it was pretty confusing to him. So this is not unusual, you know, to be undecided and to be dithering. And even people who are solidly service to other may on occasion slip, you know, and have a bad time. and maybe they've got a weak point, you know, of some sort, and they stumble, you know, through life on that, and then catch themselves and go back to being service to other. And the service to self do migrate eventually, even from the prison colonies. They find they can't progress unless they get into finally growing up spiritually and learning to interact with people properly and make that turn. They do become service to other ultimately. So there is a give and take, and I imagine even the aliens who come down to counsel humans, they might themselves be at a moment of weakness, you know, down here in the swamp of the kindergarten. They might be vulnerable, they might slip over the line and lose their standing in the service to other community, for instance. Well, the goal for both these groups hanging around is ultimately to gain converts. That's why they're here. And I often talk about the Zetas who have come to Earth as like Peace Corps volunteers. They've come in to make our life better, to counsel us, and that type of thing. Well, why are the service to self aliens here? They're here because they also want the converts. When you think about it, it's like the recruiters. Maybe I shouldn't use this analogy, but I will. I don't think much of the military life. Recruiters go out and they haul these high school students in. Well, then the recruiter might be promoted, you know, to what, corporal or whatever, you know, because now he's got a bunch of grunts under him, you know. So if they can bring people in, these people don't come in high up the line. They come in pretty much at the bottom, and everybody else gets elevated, and that's their way of thinking. So that's why they're here. They're here because they were ordered to come here and recruit, you know, and lie about it too, just like the recruiters do about what life is going to be like. But one thing that the Zetas have explained to try to sort out the confusion about, well, psychological counseling, et cetera, you know, how does that all work? But at the same time, there's some manipulation of things, you know, like the Zetas said they took down the Columbia shuttle to give a lesson to NASA and the Bush White House administration. Well, that was interference, and where is the line drawn? And I quote from Zeta Talk, Things versus People, written June 27, 2004. In a spiritual learning house, a schoolhouse for emerging souls, the prime directive is non-interference. Empathy simply does not exist if a spirit has not been there in its past. Living with physical pain, dread, or terror, or abandonment and uncertainty, loss of a child or spouse, sudden setbacks, ridicule, and expulsion from a group, the list is almost endless. At a certain point in a young soul's development, birthing guides become involved to help shape the circumstances of the next incarnation, so the setting is one which will maximize opportunities for learning for this particular entity. The young soul might be placed into a starving country or a place of wealth and power, into a body stricken with genetic disease or a body capable of intimidating others. Nevertheless, the rule of non-interference with the incarnation, so the lessons to be learned stick as they are not theoretical but very real to both the incarnated life form and the spirit within, a lesson well learned. A young soul leaning toward the service to self orientation would find in a vicious dictatorship over other young souls a false setting for the world they are heading toward. In the service to self worlds, all are solidly service to self and not easily dominated. Thus, in a balanced schoolhouse, the service to self gang does not invariably win. And when the gang turns on each other viciously, the true nature of living the service-to-self lifestyle is learned. In all these exceptions with the rule of non-interference, manipulation is done to things, not the incarnated human or life form, and thus does not interfere with the setting the emerging young soul can control. End of the quote, things versus people.
Does it mean things? Is that, by things is meant setting, wealth, poverty, dictatorship?
Yeah, that type of thing. You know, I can make it so that your car doesn't start, but I can't make it so that you can't turn, your hand doesn't operate the key, you know, or that I make you blank out so that you can't think that you were going to drive somewhere. I can interfere with your car, I can't interfere with you, you know, or your intentions, your determination. And that's where they say the line is drawn when exceptions are made and there is interference, it's interference with things, like they physically affected the Columbia shuttle, but they didn't affect the astronauts and their decisions. They didn't affect, you know, Houston or the White House or NASA control, that type of thing.
That was a choice.
That was the choice, and their choice. They understood, at least the leadership was told, you know, given plenty of warning, and they went ahead anyway, but they affected a thing. They did not affect the people and how they responded, right? So one area that clearly exemplifies, you know, things versus people is, and kind of seems to cross the line, is this alien Zeta-human hybrid race that's being developed, because there they harvest ova, they harvest sperm, they hold the babies, they let the babies, the human parent hold the baby briefly and then take it away again. It's a story often told by contactees and in the early books on, you know, contactee recall and the like. Well, this certainly seems to be more than psychological counseling. This is physical touching and invasive biological procedures, for instance. And the Zetas addressed that early in Zeta Talk, May 15, 1997, in a Zeta Talk called Custody Rights, and I quote, "To those contemplating the hybrid program while not actually participating in it, the fact that the human with parental interests are kept virtually apart from their offspring seems cruel. They hear emotional stories of mothers holding babies they instinctively recognize as theirs, where it seems the babes are torn from their mother's arms to be returned to emotionless alien nurses standing at the side. Those who actually participate in these dramas understand the underlying framework, and where they may be expressing emotion, they do not express rage or even resentment, though perhaps some sadness. Those who participate in the hybrid program are doing so because they agreed prior to their birth, prior even to their next incarnation, being selected to participate. They understand the situation, that their hybrid children cannot live on the earth in human society at this time. They understand the rich and loving environment their hybrid children are being raised within. Being solidly in the service to other orientation, they do not wish to remove their offspring from this environment, to be placed in a human setting where they in all likelihood would be maimed and killed and taunted. Custody rights over the hybrid children is not an issue of the true parents, but becomes an issue with those who are inserting themselves into the drama, outsiders, as it were, in that they can scarcely understand the many factors at play, and most certainly don't understand the resolve and commitment made by the human participants. They are not even armed with the facts." End of the quote. Well, this pre-birth agreement is arranged to ensure that humans within a family line will almost invariably agree to contribute their ova and sperm, etc. They need this family line because there's what the Zetas have called a weaving of a genetic thread, where repeated generations have to come in, DNA from repeated generations and woven in to ensure a solid hybrid that's not going to have genetic diseases or be malformed in some way. So this pre-birth agreement kind of ensures that the human will go along with it, although I think on occasion the human animal is strong-willed enough that the soul is having an argument during its incarnation. The soul may be trying to drive the body, but the body may be like a rebellious car or horse, not really wanting to, you know, be steered in the direction the soul wants to, but rarely do they have those problems. And I quote from Zeta Talk pre-birth agreement, "Our hybrid program has been granted permission to institute more pre-birth agreements than in previous centuries, where it was close to nil, because we need to ensure cooperation with those who hold genetic parentage. They sense something different and become fully aware of it when the time is right. Nonetheless, they cooperate with this pre-birth agreement remarkably well." End of the quote. Well, sensing something different, the soul is speaking to the human, who often is the last to know. The soul is old and has had many incarnations and has all this knowledge, and a lot of times people say, I just have this feeling, I just have this urge, I have this hunch. You know, I just seem to understand. It's because the soul understands, and the soul is saying to the mind, you know, of the incarnation, you know, let me fill you in on what you've missed. Well, this business of touching humans and the like, it another place where it seems to cross the line is all these reports of healings or protections and the like. You know, how does that work? What are the rules guiding healings and protections? I mean, can people just say, as they do, they say, well, you know, I've got this disease and I'm miserable, so fix me up. Or they might say that they know of somebody else who's got a problem and they're concerned about them and they want to know what they can do. And they wonder who gets it and who doesn't, because clearly not everybody does. Our misery on our earth goes on. This is part of our schoolhouse. We're supposed to respond to the misery. We're supposed to respond to the starving in sub-Saharan Africa or to the need for rescue down in New Orleans and do what we can. And if we don't, you know, then we're slow learners. We're not progressing. So obviously having everything pleasant isn't our spiritual schoolhouse, but at the same time, some people are getting healed, and we hear reports. Some people are being protected. People will say, well, you know, if the government resents Zeta Talk and they don't want talk about the coming pole shift out there, how come you're alive? How come you're still walking around? Well, I've been told I'm under a protective order, and I would have to assume that. I don't even worry about car bombs or a sniper in the tree and the like, or poison slipped into my drink when I go to a restaurant. And so I stopped worrying about that a long time ago, so I just assume that I'm under a protection. So how does it work then? If somebody wants to be healed or modified, under what situations? Some people are modified. They're made stronger and better and well, and it, even if it's a request for themselves. And here's how that line is drawn and how those determinations are made. And I quote from Zeta Talk, contactee modifications. Increasingly, contactees wishing a role will receive and assist in the form of genetic changes. Just as humans have discovered they can increase the yield of tomato plants or create pollution-eating bacteria by manipulating DNA, visitors who have been given the call by their contactees asking for this type of assistance may receive it. What does this entail? Will the contactee grow a third eye, turn green, or begin levitating at will? Contactee modification is always such that human society cannot determine that anything at all has happened. It is transparent to the society the contactee lives within, and neither the spouse, the family, the co-workers, or those passing on the street would ever guess that a change had occurred. Contactee modification covers a wide range of contactee requests, and therefore a wide range of modifications can occur. Perhaps the contactee is fearful and finds the tendency of their mind and body to interfere with their resolve an annoyance. They wish to be rid of the acid stomach, the weak knees, the distracted mind. For a modification to occur, this wish must have a basis in service to other motivations, or the modification would never be considered. The fear-ridden contactee wants less distraction in order to confront injustice, not because they wish attention as a skydiver. Modifications are such that the contactee alone senses that something is different. They are, or at least subconsciously, aware of being annoyed with some aspect of their physical body. They are aware of their intentions. When they find their physical reactions less intrusive, that they have an ability to proceed, they sense that they are somehow different. Perhaps they are sick less often, less plagued by allergies, less likely to overeat or eat the wrong foods as their appetite is surprisingly controllable, need less sleep, can concentrate better, are calm in a crisis, can deal with pain without losing control, have more stamina, can hear with more clarity, are more telepathic or find they can read others more effectively, or simply are more organized and determined. Since these effects can happen normally to humans, not being out of the range of possibility, no one but the contactee understands what has in fact occurred. They have been modified at their request. End of the quote. course, it happened to me. I got modified and had that telepathic DNA from the Zetas infused into my brain in that one spot. And it was because, even pre-birth, I wished to be in a communication role, and they fixed me up in my 20s in preparation for this.
Do you remember?
I do. I did a recall, and it was quite, I think that's in the transformation section of Zeta Talk, and it's called, I think it's called communication role or communications, and it describes that time. And in the recall, I was like strapped in a chair. My hands were like snapped in kind of like a, I don't know, like a little cuff, metal cuff, so that I couldn't raise my hands up. And I think I had something under my chin to hold my head steady. And as I've been doing the recall, I see these three Zeta faces peering at my eyes, their faces in front of my, basically, and they're asking, how do you feel? I mean, do you feel like you have to upchuck? You know, you're going to throw up. Do you feel dizzy? You know, anything? No, everything seemed fine. They were checking it out, that it was okay, that they hadn't created a disturbance, you know, or anything like that. And actually, I remember getting out of this spaceship and walking through kind of a marshy area behind the house we were living in at the time and going into the house. And so based on the house that I was walking into, I knew how old I was at that time. Now, in some cases, the rule about touching, you know, is healings for others or protection for the self or protection for others. And this is yet another rule that, the way I explain it to people is, in general, if you ask that someone else get healed, then it's likely to happen. But if you ask for yourself, you know, it's less likely to happen. Although the contactee modifications, so that they can, you know, be a warrior for the truth, basically, is one in which you ask for yourself because you're asking to be strengthened, you know, to be a better warrior. But in general, it's done for others because someone loves you, or done for another because you love that person. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Protective Healings, written September 15th, 2002. There is much desire among mankind, those who are contactees or not, for some sort of protection during the coming times. They look to their gods, to their governments, to their circle of friends and family, and see these lacking. Hearing of some protections or healings being given to humans by aliens, hope leaps into their hearts. We have, as other valid alien channels have, explained that some healing is done and some protections given. Well, where is the line drawn, and how can one apply for this? Healings are done under two circumstances only. One, because the person needing help has someone who loves them so intensely that they are willing to sacrifice themselves for that person and is aching to do something, anything, to help this. In this circumstance, it is a service to other call of the highest order and may be answered by service to other aliens who step in and give that person their wish. Healings are never done because the person needs help and begs for themselves. Two, because the person needing help is in a position that their demise or disability would be considered detrimental to programs the Council of Worlds considers of highest importance. Zeta Talk is an example of this, certainly not the only such program, nor the highest importance, but known to many, so we'll use this as an example. Should Nancy take sick, be unable to respond to interview requests or answer email, what would the impact be?
I thought about that a lot of times.
She may not be asking, but those considering the wide range of activities depend upon her message reaching certain populations and are concerned. Thus, her potential cancer or heart attack is corrected should this arise. Protections are done in a similar manner, prevention of illness, but most often prevention of assassination. This has been done in the past, as the Awashpe mentioned, during the birth of the U.S. as a democracy, as a major influence in the world. The Awashpe states that bullets were caught in the hands of angels, rather than proceeding to the assassination attempt goal. In like manner, many, many individuals are being protected, unbeknownst to them. This is not because someone giving the call desires to be protected, which is, in almost every case, a self-focused request, but because someone else has determined that their activities are of key importance to others. Thus, the best hope of being protected or healed is not to think of oneself, but of others intensely and take action to help others. This is the service to other hallmark, and when the person is doing this, they think not of themselves. End of that lengthy quote from Zeta Talk. Well, if healings and protections are done by service to other aliens, those responding to a call given by service to other humans, what possible type of touching might be done by service to self-aliens? Ooh, what a thought. They desire to terrify and frighten humans to the extent that they become self-focused and converts to the service to self-orientation. Well, what have we got? Intimidation, you know, fear tactics, haunted houses, heaven forbid. Per the rules, this can only occur if the human gives permission. In essence, submits so totally to the domination of the service to self that they are, in essence, agreeing to this pecking order, agreeing to, you know, the idea of, you know, someone can do anything to another and there's no resistance.
Well, isn't war on terror something like that?
Yeah, it is. And actually, when you think about any kind of fear tactics or the feeling basically of, I think, Richard, helplessness, you know, where people are told there's nothing you can do. You know, you can't resist. You know, you can't speak up. You can't have a voice. You can't rebel. You can't stand tall and fight this. That's really attempting to impose a kind of dictatorship and feeling that you're just going to lobotomize yourself and go along and let yourself be dominated without a free thought or without any kind of backbone and without reacting in empathy to your neighbor instead of reacting to a bunch of rules. That kind of war on terror that you have to suspect everybody in your neighborhood and you know, any minute now you're going to be biologically, you know, attacked or dirty nukes and it basically is making people become self-focused and think fearfully where they, and especially when it's a false message, that you have to look and say, who's running the show here? Are these good people or bad? What
put
is their motive?
Put on a uniform and go attack the Iraqis.
Yeah, and we had innocence, you know, this type of, and for oil. You know, this is all very service to self, and not something many people are happy about and increasingly complaining about, you know. So as far as alien-human interaction, you know, it's, in this regard, from the service to self, the human giving the call in the first place is service to self, or they wouldn't be talking to service to self aliens. And the service to self alien can affect that human's body only if the human gives permission. In essence, submits so totally to domination that they're agreeing with the alien's desire to dominate them. So, per the rules, this is not done by direct alien-human contact, by dog packs sent in to intimidate and terrify humans. People wonder, what were the dragons? What were the vampire bats? Well, they were bats. They weren't humans. Or that Mothman creature, or recently the chupacabras. The Zetas have called these dog packs, and they're brought to Earth by service-to-self handlers. But the reason that they don't like... I mean, why don't they release 20,000 dragons on New York City and just have at it? Because the handlers have to control these dog packs. They have to have them on a type of leash. It's an invisible leash, but it's there. And if the human, which is very, very rare, gives in, they can be savaged, or certainly they can be intimidated and driven more to fear. But if they don't give in, they can't be touched by these dog packs. So there has to be a leash. And this ties up a lot of those service-to-self minions, those grunts, those soldiers, you know, in the service-to-self army. So this is why with the chupacabras, we had a lot of, they're called goat suckers, we've had a lot of reports of goats mutilated, chickens eaten, but not a single human. And the same thing with cattle mutilations. You know, the cattle were mutilated to intimidate people, but there were no human mutilations, not really. And I quote from Zeta Talk, mutilations. Cattle mutilations have been a subject we have not been able to talk about until recently, as to do so would have involved actively engaging those in the service to self, a task we do not at present have the resources for, as we are engaged in higher priority tasks. This was a service to self scam we anticipated would fail, and fail it has. Humans were only mildly discomfited by mutilations and understood they were unlikely to become targets. The aliens involved wished to instill intense fear and a sense of hopelessness in the human society so that they would be inclined to self-focus from their fearful stand and lean toward the service to self orientation. Thus, they targeted the genitals and other sensitive and protected organs such as eyes and mouth and the anal opening, end of quote. Well, you know, there's stories about the virgins chained to a stake and here comes the dragon, etc. Well, and maybe the dragon ate the virgin, but here again, it was a human, by human action, the humans chained that virgin to the stake just as they throw them into volcanoes to placate the gods and etc. And why, if the dragons were so huge and could fly and all that, you'd have the knight go in with his sword and slay the dragon, because the dragon was not able or allowed to slay that knight by the rules. And if he had courage and went in there and was not going to be intimidated, then it was a one-way street, and the knight could slay the dragon, and the dragon couldn't hurt the knight. And I quote just briefly from some examples here on dragons and Mothman and Chupacabra, and then we're running out of time. Theta Talk dragons. Hundreds were brought to Earth and released on terrified villages. The dragons ate humans, which were neither swift runners nor able to barricade themselves in their mud huts, and were a tastier morsel than the deer, which ran fast and had taut, lean muscles. The legends speak of sacrifices where humans would periodically offer one of their own to placate the dragon. Well, of course, this reduced the rampages, as dinner had been brought to the door. And I quote from Mothman. What was this large birdman seen swooping over the mountain country, and what was its purpose? We have stated that vampires, dragons, and the recent chupas were not intelligent aliens, but more akin to dog packs controlled by service-to-self aliens. Fearful humans think of themselves more and ignore empathy for others, and thus are pushed into training for entry into the service-to-self ranks, or so these service-to-self aliens hope. As dog packs, they are allowed to encounter, terrify, and even kill humans should the human basically give up and submit. Thus, there are stories of dragons consuming virgins and vampires biting to death, victims virtually drained of blood. And, of course, we're familiar with the chupas, which happened very recently. And that kind of summarizes the rules as far as alien-to-alien interaction and alien-to-human interaction, although we could talk a long time about how they've interfered with some of the NASA space programs and the like, but those are things, not people, and these are always exceptions that the Council of Worlds allows. So what do you think, Richard? Did that kind of cover it and address some of your questions? This is a very complicated issue.
It addressed some of my questions, but I certainly have a lot more questions. I'm wondering, is there a historic example of unlimited engagement? Oh. Originally, you gave three types of engagement that happen, but I'm just wondering if in history is there something we can remember or is written about where there was an unlimited engagement?
You know, the one thing I'm thinking of is the Vedas. The Vedas actually describe alien interactions with other aliens before the rule where our contacts were only to be recorded in our subconscious. You know, like right around the time of Roswell, we slipped into this rule because we were going to rapidly become aware of aliens and they didn't want people to be alarmed and fearful. But before that, everybody remembered their contacts with aliens in their conscious. And the Vedas were written during this time. So I'll bet you if one looked through the Vedas, they could find some of these engagements between aliens and the battles they had. And some of them might have been unlimited, basically means, I suppose it'd be kind of hard for the human to discern, but unlimited means until the death, you know, fight to the death, all, no holds barred, anything goes.
That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought. Those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.
Been listening to a blog in broadcasting service, a service to others' endeavor. Thank you very much, and good night.